So good afternoon, Representative.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone. And I am very pleased to convene this very first meeting of the House Special Committee on Small Business Growth. Today is the 29th of February, 2016. And colleagues, I think Representative Leininger may be with us in a couple of minutes, but I wanted to make sure that for this very first meeting that you also became better acquainted with Mr. Brennan, who is going to be operating as our committee assistant during this period, and also Ms. Malone, who is going to be keeping track of our every word. We have one piece of business that we need to transact here at the very beginning, and that is to adopt committee rules. And those are provided to you in your packet today. I think the rules are pretty straightforward in terms of committee operation. One thing I did want to stress is that that these rules do allow members to participate in future meetings by telephone. You would not be able to vote by telephone, but I don't anticipate we'd be doing much voting here outside of legislative days. So I don't anticipate that being a problem, but we do plan to meet more frequently than simply during legislative days. So phoning in is an option for those of you that don't have the opportunity to travel.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, I would move we adopt the committee rules for the House Special Committee on Small Business Growth.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, you have heard the motion. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition to adopting the rules? If not, the rules are adopted. And this being the first meeting of a special committee, I'm very pleased that Speaker Kotek has joined us this afternoon to give us a little background on why she brought us all together. Welcome, Speaker Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. For the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, and Speaker of the House. Thank you for the opportunity to start you off. I primarily wanted to say thank you because you all have your regular committee assignments. You all have the rest of your life when you're out in the interim. So I thank you for taking on additional work. We have a very excellent set of policy committees. Some of you serve on business and labor, serve on different types of committees, both subcommittees and other types of committees. And sometimes I think for small employers who are very different, there's no one small business. You can't just say all small businesses look a certain way. And because of that, I think it's sometimes hard to find a spot here in the legislature to have a very targeted conversation. You know, when I go to the Oregon Business Summit on an annual basis and they talk about all the different sectors and the different clusters of all the different types of economic parts of our state, there are small employers in each of those sectors and those clusters. But oftentimes the solutions that are put forth are very high level, meant to apply to all employers of any size. And when you're a very large employer, you're going to take different advantage of certain things than, say, a smaller employer might. The goal of putting this committee together, and it is a special committee, you will have the ability to draft legislation, is to come up with those sector-by-sector recommendations that can help small businesses who are going to get lost in the rest of the conversation. And so I would urge you to be creative, to bring as many experts in as you need, and to come back to us in 2017 as our experts and say, here are the types of things you can do for the ag sector or the tourism sector or, you know, those Main Street businesses. I helped pass legislation last year for that program to help Main Street revitalization. And we heard from small businesses. That's a different set of businesses than you might find at that coming to the business summit. So whatever that sector is that you can help lift up and promote, I look forward to those conversations. And if there's anything you need from my office, please let me know. But you are in capable hands with committee staff. Patrick has served on the Transportation Economic Development Committee. So that economic development nexus, I think, is really helpful. But I just encourage you to do good work. I look forward to your recommendations. And I just want to thank you for taking on additional work.
Thank you, Speaker Kotek. Are there questions? Yes, Co-Chair Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Madam Speaker, I really want to thank you for convening this committee. I think it really shows your appreciation for small business in the state of Oregon and your understanding that small business is different than other segments of the economy. And so I really want to compliment you for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I want to thank the co-chairs for serving also on the Governor's Small Business Council, which I think there'll be a good nexus between. And the Governor, I think, has some different plans. Mm-hmm. But I think everything we do here will be complementary with that.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I would hope that we would have the ability to bring in small business people from our specific areas and the different slots we have, because we have so many slots of businesses, and every one of those are unique. Everyone has their own set of circumstances, but they all have some common thread, and I would hope we could bring those people to the table and invite them up. I know there's a lot of small businesses in Medford, you know, and these are small entrepreneurial businesses where they may have 5 employees, they may have 3 employees, they may have 15, but they're all just trying to earn a living, and they would, I'm sure, would just love to sit down and talk with us on how we can make them better.
I would absolutely agree, and co-chairs and Representative Esquivel, you know, part of the goal of who's on this committee is we try to get as much geographic diversity as possible, and the fact that you mentioned that you might be doing, could be doing meetings with people on the phone, certainly, you know, utilize people calling in, because I do think it's hard, especially if you're a small employer, to just have time to come to Salem. I mean, that is a hard thing to do, so maybe those phone calls will come in really handy with the businesses themselves. So,
follow up, please. And again, I echo what Co-Chair Smith said, Representative Smith, that I thank you very much for taking the time and the effort to reach out to these businesses.
Well, you're welcome. I'm looking forward to the work.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I just wanted to echo the same and just to say thank you and thanks for the opportunity that you've given each one of us to be able to reach out to our constituents and others that have small businesses. I think it's definitely headed in the right direction, so I just wanted to say thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Now just go do good work, right?
Yeah, now we need to get to work.
Well, thank you, Madam Speaker. And for those listening at home, not in the room, I hope that they would take note of the fact that that while this is a special committee, that you've also convened it in a special way with co-chairs and with equal numbers from each of the parties that are here in the Capitol, and that's not without significance. So we look forward to working together for the next couple of months and doing good things for Oregon's smallest employers. This is going to be good and worthwhile and exciting work. Thank you so much for giving us this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you all. Appreciate the time.
Well, colleagues, we pulled this meeting together rather quickly after the announcement late last week, but we did invite some people to come and give us kind of an overview of the state of small business here in Oregon. And I wanted to bring a panel up to share that perspective with you. And I wanted to bring people up from the Oregon Small Business Development Center Network. So, Mr. Gregory, I know you're here. You've got a couple of your directors with you. So why don't you come on up and introduce yourself. And we're going to be meeting for about an hour today, which means we have about 50 minutes left, and we have one more presentation when the three of you are finished. So thank you so much for being the first presenters to this special committee.
Absolutely. Well, Co-Chair Gomberg and Co-Chair Smith, it's a great pleasure to be with the committee and members. I want to also introduce Steve Curley from Central Oregon Community College Small Business Development Center, our director there, and Mark Manley, Lynn Benton Community College SBDC director. As our state director, I'm very proud to be a part of a network that has a 33-year history helping build Oregon's best businesses. We do so in a lot of ways, but our primary means are through advice, guidance, and instruction. I might need that point there. I've given you all a handout that will follow this presentation, maybe a little easier to see in a few of the slides that I've added for us. Anyway, this is fine. I think we can get there. There we go. So Oregon Small Business Development Centers were hosted in all 17 of the community colleges and 2 of the regional universities at SOU as well as EOU. And we're a program of the U.S. Small Business Administration. We're about 36 years nationally, and were founded in 1983 as a network here in Oregon. We also team across a number of other state departments, which include ODOT. We assist them with some of their emerging small business and disadvantaged business enterprises. We work with the Self-Employment Assistance Program with those clients that are in pre-venture stages. Particularly, we work with them during the recession such that we could help them to form businesses there. And we continue to work to basically help to expand capacities, in some cases in both training and advice and guidance.
Excuse me, Mr. Gregory?
Yes.
Along those lines, I mean, one of the questions that we get into on a regular basis when we talk about small businesses is what constitutes a small business? And so what size companies are you typically working with?
Right. And sometimes small business isn't what we think it is. It's actually fairly large based on SBA size standards. It's typically 200 employees or fewer. And it can be above that even for certain manufacturing enterprises that Mr. Shearer will also speak to. But typically about 200 employees or fewer.
Thank you.
Would be our consideration. So we provided over 150,000 current and prospective business owners with advice and guidance. Over 550,000 have attended training of various kinds. Again, the program was brought together through Congress to really bring together both the classroom and instruction alongside small business owners that actually run our program. So I'm very proud to say that we are both run by small business people for small business people, and I think it makes it a very unique program in the community where they have connecting points and the ability to really understand the needs of their local area. Some of the opportunities we have within the Oregon Small Business Development Center Network, we're the state's largest geographic provider of small business assistance services. So really we have about 25 locations when you consider our satellite locations, so we have a strong reach. Over our 33 years, we've responded to a number of challenges and opportunities, and we can see that even in the last decade as we came out of the recession, and now we're beginning to grow in terms of jobs. Our centers have leveraged local, state, and federal partnerships to tailor services to the unique business needs of their communities. And I think we'll talk about some of those today, and really Mark and Steve are representing some of their own communities. They'll also talk a little bit more about our SBDC Excel, previously known at the legislature under Grow Oregon as a pilot program. It's been a very impactful program in terms of growing jobs in the local communities. This is probably easier viewed even from your printout, but I thought it was an interesting display of kind of where are SBDC services. And so you'll really see that while we have a lot of retail in the local area, you'll also see that we have food and beverage, something we'll talk about as a part of our SBDC Excel effort, manufacturing, which we'll also speak to, and a number of others across services. The other services falls into a fairly broad category. It could even include technology and software companies, but there's quite a bit of innovation in those spaces that we'll also talk about in a bit. As we talk about specializations, I wanted to talk briefly about specialized services, because one of the things we saw during the recession was that small businesses really had to do more with less. They had to be extremely innovative in order to survive. And the question is how do we take those kinds of expertise that we had throughout our state and within those small businesses and be able to leverage that? And how we were able to do that is, we'll talk a little bit about SBDC Excel, which is our growth accelerator, a little bit later. But I'll also talk about how they utilize some of these other specialized services, which begins with our Southern Oregon Market Research Institute. It was formed about 4 years ago out of Southern Oregon with graduate interns. And really what we know about innovation is that you have to understand your marketplace and how to scale within that marketplace. So the Market Research Institute was created. It currently does about 150 market research reports. Those range from 6 hours to over 20 hours, and about 150 clients touched in the state each year. But it really helps in terms of helping them expand into new markets as well as understand their existing markets and how to be more effective.
Really quick, Mr. Co-Chair, questions as we go along, or do you want us to hold questions?
Good question.
Why don't we, I think we've got one more page here. Why don't we hold questions, and we'll finish this part of the presentation.
And I've kept it fairly brief for that purpose. As we look at new markets, I also categorize our global trade and international trade efforts. Those are hosted out of Portland Community College. We're the only certified global business professional program in the state of Oregon. And what that means is that we reach out even to Business Oregon and their business development officers to basically certify them such that their understanding is where it needs to be in terms of being able to assist on an international trade. We also have 10 certified global business professionals within our network, so it's helped us to again spread that expertise statewide. As we look at our capital access team, it's very similar. So that was formed about 5 years ago. It was actually formed under federal dollars through the SBA Jobs Act. We've got varying levels of expertise in our state in terms of as it relates to finance and accounting and financial analysis. So what we did was we identified where we had some of our strong points. We created regional capital access team advisors, or CAT advisors as we would call them. And we basically work with them to work alongside the banks in both lender relations as well as loan preparation. And it's been a very successful effort. As you'll see in one of the attached impact reports, we just reached $63 million in impacts. And when we report those impacts on that sheet, everything we report is both attributed from the client, and we played a significant role, and validated by them in terms of signature. So our metrics are very tight as it relates to those types of impacts. And we've just continued. That was almost a doubling in terms of the capital formation that we saw in the previous year. So the capital access team's been very effective, and you'll hear how it's effective in the work that both Mark and Steve do. So next, the technology impact program, also created with federal dollars. That was actually through the Public Utilities Commission, a state broadband data development project that we competed nationally for and were able to win a $1.2 million grant effort to. Took place over 4 years, and really what we attempted to do there and did well was we provided advice and guidance more specifically to Main Street businesses as they look to do more with less. We recognized that technology was kind of an overarching means of helping them to do that. So in that process, we did everything from e-commerce, where we were helping them to expand their marketplace online, but we also helped them through e-operations. That was more trying to create software integrations and these types of things, such that they could be more streamlined and efficient in their operation. So that is our technology impact program, and you'll see that all these programs work alongside our accelerator to help clients. And finally, our signature program formed actually just about the same time our network was formed, some 33 years ago, the Small Business Management Program. Often when I let people know as I'm out shopping in my local community or other communities, you know, what I do, they often say, oh, I took the Small Business Management Program. And I can't count the number of times I've heard them almost talk about it like it was their graduate MBA, and many refer to it that way. It's very street level. It really encompasses, much like an MBA would, higher level training across all elements of the business, such that they basically have peer-to-peer cohorts, much like a graduate program would. And they, through that process, are able to grow their business and oftentimes end up meeting outside of the classroom even, much like a chamber of commerce would. So at any rate, very proud of the specialized programs that we have. And with that, I'll pause and maybe also invite questions as well as additional conversation.
Representative Smith, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. First of all, Mark, you're awesome. You do such a great job for the state of Oregon. I have a close working relationship with the SBDCs. Would it be possible for this committee to get a redacted copy of that market research, a sample of it, yes, so the committee can see the type of research that goes on? I think you, committee members, you're going to find it's pretty powerful, the level of detail that comes out of that research and the assistance that offers small business. And so if our committee could get a copy of that to see firsthand what you're talking about, that'd be perfect.
Absolutely. And you know, the average report, some of the advanced reports take longer, but typically we can turn reports around in about 2 weeks. I mean, it's very quick, and it needs to be such that it's responsive to the business needs.
And were Mr. Manley and Mr. Curley here as your wingman, or did they have presentations?
They are very, very much both. Wingman as well, as we're really, I don't consider it the bottom, but a customer-focused organization that starts at the customer and works our services and design up. So I'd love the opportunity for them to speak about how that happens and some of the needs.
Well, let me ask a question first, and any one of the three of you can jump in. I appreciate this overview, and this committee is going to be about learning, but it's also going to be about doing. And you're on the front lines. You help 150,000 new or expanding companies. I want to start a business in Oregon. What's the biggest challenge that I face? And I know that there's a million different kinds of ideas that can turn into at least 100,000 different new businesses. But I'm looking for some kernels here, gentlemen. What's the biggest challenge that I face that this committee might be able to help with?
Well, that's a great question, and thank you very much for inviting us, and thank you very much for asking that question.
I need to get you to introduce yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mark Manley. I'm the director of the Small Business Development Center at Limbetton Community College and executive director of the SBDC Network's Growth Accelerator. your question is perfectly apropos because we find the same thing is true with practically every business we engage with. Now, certainly Mark mentioned 200 employers or smaller is our focal point, but we have many people just like yourself. I want to start a new business. What do I do? And the typical scenario is this. They are really good at something. They make a product. They offer a service. And they're top-notch at that. But running a business is much more than making your product or providing your service. There's market development, there's sales to close accounts, there's the actual delivery of the service or the product, there's finance, managing your team, advertising, you know, it's a whole bunch of things that maybe aren't your forte. And what we consistently find is that we can partner with entrepreneurs such as yourself in this example and say, great idea. Have you thought about how are you going to develop your market? How will the first customers find out about your business and walk in your door? At what level of revenue do you need to get to break even? How long might it take to recoup the investment you're putting in your business? And one of the key questions, and that relates to our capital access team as well, is do you actually have enough capital to invest in starting the business and carry that business to the point where it earns its own keep? And that's where many people who have a great product or a great service fall over. Now, we find that certainly true, like in this case where you have a business you want to get started. We find similar issues right up the food chain into companies that may be in our small business management program where, once again, they've grown to 5 or 10 employees. They're doing well, but there's opportunity for growth in these other areas necessary to run your business. And even
please.
Well, I didn't want to interrupt you.
Last point was that even at the companies we're engaging with, where they might have $1 to $5 to $10 to $20 million a year of revenue, sizable companies, very often they've gotten to a critical mass by being really good at those product or service folk things that they do. Maybe not so much on how they do their capital stack, how they do their marketing, and we've been able to engage with them and bolster those areas to facilitate their success.
Mr. Kocher.
Thank you, Mr. Kocher. So, Representative Gomberg raised a good point. We want to be a committee that does something.
Mm-hmm.
We want to help small business, and while I don't speak for the Kocher, I think he feels like I do that the SBDCs are a key partner in developing small business in Oregon. How difficult would it be for you folks to run a survey through your system that asked entrepreneurs what do you see as your needs, and then to report back to the co-chair on what that is? Would that be
very doable? And in fact, a best practice. We were just recently accredited nationally. We have an accreditation process, and needs assessment is a big part of it. We have that in our centers, but I think we could do something more central to your point.
Is that something that you could work with us on to put together, send it out throughout your system, and then perhaps come back and report back to us on what you heard from these folks?
Absolutely.
Would that be okay, Mr.
Absolutely. You know, you clued in on the thing that I talk about all the time. You want to start a restaurant. You know all about cooking, but you don't know anything about Excel. You don't know how you want to incorporate and structure your business. You don't know how to write a business plan. You folks are the go-to operation for those kinds of hands-on tools that turn ideas into businesses. What about all the folks we're missing, the folks that don't come knocking on your door? How do we reach them?
My name is Steve Curley. I'm the director for the Small Business Development Center at Central Oregon Community College in Bend and Redmond. Representative Gomberg, you pose a really good question, and that's something we face every day, and that is how do we market our services to the small businesses out there that may not know about us? And frankly, it's done, you know, at the state level, but also center by center. I think one of the advantages we have in being located at all these community colleges throughout the state is that we are in our communities, and not every state is structured this way. So I think it's an advantage for us here in Oregon, something to think about. One of the ways that we do that is we work really closely with our business partners like Economic Development for Central Oregon, the Bend Economic Development Advisory Board. There's a local organization called Opportunity Knox, which is a peer-to-peer group advising together. And so really understanding who the key people are in the region that also communicate to those businesses, develop those relationships, and get the word out through them. That's how we've been successful in Central Oregon. But to your point, I think that there's more we could do there. I think there's an opportunity to grow that more in a statewide as opposed to just a local level.
Well, let me ask you this question. I want to start a business. The first thing I need to do is go register my business, whether it's registering my assumed business name or forming a corporation or getting a license. And the Secretary of State's trying to create a one-stop location for all of that kind of registration. Are you able to network with those new names, or if not, is there something that's preventing you from getting that information and reaching out to people who say, I want to start a business?
We actually have partnered and recently published a written doing business in Oregon's written resource guide for businesses that are licensing. As a matter of fact, he has a copy.
I have a copy for all of them.
Well, thank you.
Very good.
The Secretary of State's office also has tremendous web traffic, and what we found nationally as well as in state is that of the about 50% of businesses that seek any type of assistance, 75% of that group is looking online. The Secretary of State's office through the corporate division has a tremendous number of folks coming to license online or learn about other factors of doing business in the state. So we've actually had some private meetings with them and worked to develop web links through that site so that we can continue to inform them, even if they may not be looking for assistance, that it's available.
We also have an online presence. BizCenter.org, where if someone comes to that, they can find a local center fairly easily through that online presence.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Co-Chair. And I think you kind of answered this in a roundabout way, so I'm thinking this is not happening, but when a business registers with the Secretary of State's office, do you get that information and then market them for your services at that point? Are you reaching out to all businesses that register?
There is some communication comes out of their office that lets the client know about us, but the number of registrations are substantial, and so there isn't a system at this point that's directing them to where we're actually getting those and dispensing that through the centers. There's not a marketing vehicle for that kind of a volume as of yet, but what's happening is more of a call it a push marketing to let them know of our services as they license.
Follow-up?
Please.
Would that be an option, though? Is it just too vast that there's too many that you couldn't reach out to each one, or?
It's interesting to me because the ability by electronically to do that, I think, for those of us that have done mail, it would be challenging. But I think electronically, it's intriguing. So I think that's a point for investigation.
Thank you.
Yes.
Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. How do you, like in Southern Oregon, we have Southern Oregon Regional Economic Development. And then we also have the SBDC. How do you intermingle that? That's what I'm trying to figure out in my own mind. Because I used to be on Southern Oregon Regional Economic Development. In fact,
are you asking if I could clarify your question? Are you asking how do they work together?
How do you work together on that?
Maybe I could take a stab at that because we work very closely with EDCO Economic Development for Central Oregon, and we focus on different areas. EDCO focuses. Partly, they have a Move, Start, Grow. I'm on their board, so I'm somewhat familiar with their organization. They do work on bringing new companies into the state, into Central Oregon. They focus a lot of time when a company is growing on relocating and finding space, finding the right piece of property or building for them. But when it comes to digging into the business's financials, into their sales and marketing, getting a little deeper into the business, they usually hand that off to us, or we get referrals on companies that really need to do more business planning, and they're not that far along, so they don't serve the need of kind of getting under the hood of that business. They're more interested in, they might connect them up with a resource like us, make sure that they're finding a location that's going to keep them in Central Oregon in this case, and any of the land use around that. They also have forgivable loan fund and some tax abatement programs based on
revolving funds and all kinds.
Yeah, they do some of those things that we don't do. But we have a very good referral service back and forth, very good relationships. And in our neck of the woods, we work very well together.
Representative Lively.
Thank you. So Mike and I have worked for years in economic development, and one of the things I hear, have always heard and continue to hear, whether it's a brand new business starting up or a small business struggling to survive, is the impact or role that regulation, rules apply. And those could be rules, banking rules. I mean, they're as wide as there are organizations, the rules. So part of what I hope we get out of this, I like to, and I appreciate those concerns, and sometimes they're real and sometimes they're not, but they distract, I guess, from them. But I'm trying to understand the role your organization plays as you're counseling people or talking about it. At the same time, they're struggling with how to manage their business. They're also struggling with land use and compliance with rules dealing with personnel. So how do those things intersect, and what kind of information do you have that would help enlighten us to what the real impact is versus just the fact that they're frustrated with it?
Sure, and we may be able to even cite some examples here, but I'll start with resources. And really, at the federal level, we have a national ombudsman as a part of the SBA, mm-hmm. so at a congressional level, we can connect some of those needs. At the state level, of course, and I know she's going to probably provide some testimony in the future, but Ruth Miles, our state small business advocate, is another person. We're very closely aligned, and Ruth has even done some recent training with our directors, so she's very active. I don't know if Mark or if you or Steve want to provide some specific examples of where that's happened, but I even talk to small businesses that here and there they're having issues in terms of OSHA and various safety issues, and I think that's very common. But I don't know.
Well, yeah, sure. Part of the secret of our sauce is that many of the people doing advice, like Steve and I, we've started, grown, and exited our own businesses successfully. So we bring that been there, done that perspective to the entrepreneur. In doing so, we've come up the learning curve. A person, as in Coach here, Gomberg's example, who I want to start a new business, I make cupcakes, I'm in a cupcake business, may not be aware of all the rules and regulations that may apply. We had one company who is in our Oregon Growth Accelerator, growing like leaps and bounds. It's a food manufacturer, great product. Wasn't fully aware of the full range of employment practice regulations that exist in compliance, and one of the very first things we identified was that this is an area of focus to help him improve. He wasn't out of compliance, but he just wasn't aware of all the regulations.
So if I might follow.
Please.
So, and I appreciate that. I guess what I'm hoping somehow, is, and maybe this is more to the committee we get to, is what the real impact, again, and I appreciate there is impacts, but I'm trying to understand the impact of those rules and regulations versus the impact of not having enough capital versus the reason those other things mm-hmm. that cause businesses, especially small businesses, to fail, because so many of them fail early to begin with.
And yeah.
I can just tell you, as working in economic development for years, what I heard most of was the rules or the regulations were one of the biggest reasons, but what I've never been able to actually ascertain for sure, what role did they really play versus so many of these other factors that go into whether the business is successful or not. And I don't know whether how we'll get at that, but I guess that's just from my standpoint important.
Well, just a comment, Representative Lively. I think every business is a little different in that there are certain regulations that affect businesses differently. So I think it's very difficult to just kind of broad brush stroke that in terms of which regulations affect which businesses, as Mark was saying, we play a role of educator, especially for these early stage businesses that aren't aware of them. So we make them aware of them, and then as they grow, I mean, at our center we deal with that a little bit, not a lot, and that's where we rely on our economic development partners to help us with that, because they deal a little bit more with those types of regulations, whether it's land use or other things. And so in that, we would refer them over and allow them to work with them on those specific things. So that's my experience, but I agree with you. If there's a way to remove barriers, we need to identify what they are and then attack it.
Thank you.
Colleagues, we've got about 10 minutes left with this panel. I was going to jump to Representative Leininger. I know you were tied up in revenue for a few minutes, so thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Well, I'm really excited to be part of this committee, and I'm excited about the work that we may be able to do together to help Oregonians create good jobs for themselves and their families. I have a question about how the Small Business Development Centers interrelate with Oregon Inc. And I was just at an Oregon Inc. Mm-hmm. meeting, and they were unveiling There are potential new areas of focus, which will include possibly, depending on what happens tomorrow at their meeting, food and beverage focus. And you have in your handout food and beverage as, you know, traded sector firms poised for growth. And having spent a lot of time in the last 14 months on legal cannabis and hemp, industrial hemp, but just knowing that we have, you know, Oregon wine, Oregon hops and beer, Oregon cider and distilled spirits are all areas in which, plus cannabis and hemp, whatever your position on those issues, are areas in which Oregon has national acclaim and its ability to be successful. Do you envision being able to target some of your services at those businesses? Because as I see that, you know, it offers a real opportunity for rural Oregon all around our state to grow some of these great products. The Farm Bureau has been tremendously helpful in the work we've been trying to do. Then there's value-added processing, and in at least some of those sectors, potential traded sector sales. It seems like a home run. Is that something that you're focused on? And I'm hopeful we can be focused on that, too.
And I think this is great timing for the next, you know, slide, which was our SBDC Excel efforts. And I think both Mark and Steve could cite some specific ways that we can work with those traded sector companies, you know, in this space. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. And, you know, whether it's food and beverage, which is a key differentiator in Oregon, we have a wonderful brand here. So we can truly help companies scale and create jobs in that space, but also we're finding good traction in technology and in manufacturing as well. Our team of advisors who have that, been there, done that experience, engage in the Oregon Growth Accelerator Program with the leaders of these companies that are traded sector, that are bringing money into their community, bringing money into Oregon. And our process is to identify with them what are the key barriers holding them back from achieving the growth that they envision, or what are the key operational challenges that they're facing. Oftentimes it's capital. Over the last couple of years, we've worked with more than 50 of these larger traded sector companies, including food and beverage and others, and helped them raise more than $7 million of new capital for their business. We've also helped them to fine-tune and implement marketing strategies that enable them to enter new markets, often supported by customized market research from our market research team. They've taken that capital and their own resources and created well more than 70 jobs just in those 50 companies in our growth accelerator and produce revenue increases year over year that they've validated of more than $30 million. If you take a look at the direct economic impact, certainly to each one of those companies, but also to the communities, to the districts in which those companies are located, that's $50 million of direct economic benefit coming from a program that we are very much appreciative of the state's support for, but a program investment in the first two biennia totaling about $500,000. So that one program alone of the SBDC has a return on investment of your investment of $100 of direct economic benefit to the companies and community for each dollar that you've invested. And that's just the client-validated direct impact of capital and jobs and revenue. Studies have shown that a dollar that comes into a community gets spent 5 to 15 times before it leaks out someplace else. So we're not going to try and calculate what that number is. But what we're seeing is we've been able to come alongside dozens of traded sector businesses and help propel their growth, creating jobs and benefits for our communities.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Kutcher. I want to put a finer point on earlier comments that you and I have shared and now Representative Lively shared. I think in order for this committee to be truly successful, we have to identify what are the needs of small business. And I think we need to break this out a little bit and recognize that mom and pop small business with one or two people, their needs are going to be different than a company with 50 employees versus the larger definition, say, of a company with 199 employees or 200. And I guess I'm going to share this. The SBDCs are our partner in this conversation. And I hate to do this, but to me it seems like we need to lean on them, to you folks, to help us survey these folks and ask the question that Representative Lively has asked, and that is, what are those issues that are keeping you from hiring the next employee? are helping you from growing. And I know you, I know the SPDC is inside and out. And I know you've got that system available to where we could reach out to these folks and survey them. We might have to lean on Business Oregon to throw a few bucks their way. Maybe we need to talk to the co-chairs here at the end to help get that done. But I think in order for this committee to really put a plan of attack together to bring legislation forward, we have to survey these folks and ask them, what are your needs? What are your needs? And you folks have the ability to do that statewide and to reach everyone from the single member LLC to the C-Corps.
And, you know, I'm really glad to see Chris Shearer here and presenting after us, because we've really identified, you know, in private meetings, you know, their service of some of those very large size, you know, manufacturing companies. And so there are some natural marriages as you look at business size and their needs and how we serve them together.
Would that be overly burdensome for us to work with you to put something together like that?
I think it's helpful.
Is it? Okay.
Representative Esquil.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. That's why I suggested right off the bat that we bring some people in and ask them. You take my area down there. I have Lithia that's a pretty good size employer down to people that have two and three employees. So that's quite a range. Now, I don't know what you consider small business, but I've always considered small business like 50 or less. You know, that's, to me, that's small business. So, but anyway, I'd be looking forward to asking them the question, how can we get you to the next level, or how can we get you started?
Yeah, we're glad to ask that, and I really appreciate your amplification there and Co-Chair Smith's comment that it really differs by size. Somebody, getting back to Co-Chair Gomberg's cupcake business, somebody starting a new business that's really going to be a lifestyle business that will support them has a very different need than a company at the 5 to 10 employee level or the 50 to 100 level. We're certainly glad to work on giving you some good salient survey information there.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. We're going to have to break in just a minute, but don't leave yet, because I've got a homework assignment for you as well. I've got one small business owner in my area that I'm particularly well acquainted with, and not a day goes by that she talks to me about the challenge of paperwork. And she talks to me about that over breakfast, when I'm sitting at the desk next to her, at lunch, at dinner, and at the hot tub at the end of the day. It's still about paperwork, paperwork, paperwork. One of the reasons that we invited you here to kick this off is because you have that broader perspective. I'm sure if we bring agencies in here, they're each going to have excellent reasons for the paperwork that they request. You have a perspective that's a little bit broader, and I hope that you could go home and come back to us with some suggestions that your colleagues have of where the duplication is. Where is the redundancy? Where is the unnecessity of some of those requirements that I'm hearing about on a day-to-day basis? So that would be my homework assignment for you as well. Now, I think that we're going to have you back. And by the way, that invitation to submit suggestions on paperwork redundancy or lack of necessity, that's an open invitation. Anybody wants to send that, we'll send it to our committee administrator, and he will share it with all of us. But please get back to us with some thoughts on that topic. And I get the sense that you may have had some additional presentations for us, but at the same time, you've had some great questions up here, which I think reflects the interest of this committee as well as the respect that we have for all the work that you're doing out there. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity. And feel free to reach out to us after if there's other questions.
I promise you that's going to be happening. Mr. Shearer.
Good afternoon, Chairs Gomberg and Smith. Chris Shearer, President of the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. I know that some of you know quite a bit about us. We've visited you several times, and some of you may not have heard of us. So pardon me if there's a little bit of redundancy in my presentation. The Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership was formed in the mid-90s by virtue of a federal grant that was aimed at providing services to small and medium-sized manufacturers in Oregon to help them become more competitive. So I'd like to talk about what we do and the impact we have, but I think I'll start with a short statement on why manufacturing is so important to Oregon economy. Many of you may not know this, that not only is manufacturing alive and well in Oregon, Oregon actually is ranked usually one or two in the country for its dependence on manufacturing relative to all other industries. So, it varies on a year-to-year basis, but and how it's measured, but somewhere around 28% of Oregon's economy is dependent on the manufacturing sector. So, super very important to Oregon. It's also important to the employees of Oregon, or the working people of Oregon, by virtue of the fact that manufacturing wages and benefits are substantially higher than virtually all other industries. They tend to be about 130% compared to any other industry. So,
Mr. Shar, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. Could you just touch very quickly on geographic dispersal of that manufacturing here in Oregon?
Well, it generally follows population. Most manufacturers, I wouldn't say most, I would say nearly half of the manufacturers in the state are located in the greater Portland area. So extending down to Wilsonville and up and east to, say, Gresham and out of Clackamas. The next largest manufacturing community would be Eugene. Salem, I think, is next beyond that. The 93% of all manufacturers, no, that's not quite true. Let's see. I'm trying to grab the numbers in my head. 7% are in eastern Oregon, so quite widely dispersed there, as are all institutions and people. And there's an enclave in central Oregon, maybe about, I think it's about 8 to 10% of the manufacturers of the country.
Okay, I appreciate that answer, and please don't let me distract you. Go right ahead with where you were.
No worries. So again, manufacturing is critical to the state's economy, and the effect of the manufacturing industry on working families is rather significant. So OMAP is really a consulting outfit. We have, at the moment, I think 15 folks that are what we call field staff. They work directly shoulder to shoulder with manufacturers throughout the state to help them improve their operations in whatever way is necessary. A great deal of our work is focused on operational effectiveness. Operational excellence is kind of the name of that practice. And this is about being able to produce a product at the lowest reasonable cost, highest level of quality, and delivered on time. So it's very much driven by customer demand. And the ability to make products at a cost that still allows for a reasonable profit and return to the customer. That's a hard thing to do. It's a dynamic world that our manufacturers live in. They have to constantly balance issues related to labor, materials costs, logistics, rules and regulations, many, many, many of the environmental factors that all businesses have to deal with. But in their particular case, they have to convert a material into something useful. Most of our manufacturers actually sell to other companies. We have lots of second and third tier companies within the supply chain. So they're often making parts for other companies, larger companies that either sell directly to consumers or other industries themselves. So OMAP, the handout that I provided mentions references the impact that OMAP has had on the state's companies in the period of time that's been measured since 2002. and also includes some information on the multiplier effect of that. So by virtue of a survey that each customer is asked to respond to, conducted by a third party at the end of every project, OMEP is responsible for the retention and creation of just over $15,000 jobs in this 12-year period referenced on the handout. Total value added of over $1 billion, $1.2 billion. With some help from the Legislative Finance Office, we calculate an estimate of the taxes that are paid back to the state by virtue of the retained and created employment. And on the basis of that, have calculated a 28 to 1 return on the state's investment in OMEP. So we consider that very important. The state is responsible for just slightly under 20% of OMEP's total cost, and the rest of the cost is split between the federal government and the employers themselves. So we do charge fees, and those fees slide on the basis of many factors over time, but typically ability to pay and geographic location. The state's investment in OMEP is used to help us do things that are hard to do. So it's very hard for us to serve rural areas efficiently. It takes us a while. It's hard to identify companies that have the needs, and once we've identified them, there's usually travel involved, so it's hard to do this. So it's hard to serve them efficiently. Somebody's got to pay for that travel, and typically the client can't afford it. So the state money is used to ensure that we have a rural presence, and the state money is also used to help smaller companies that have a more difficult time affording the fees. So we combine those two factors often. And they help support our rural operations. So we have an office in Medford, we have an office in Bend, and we have an office, we'll be starting an office in Eugene. We've got recruitment underway for that now.
So, Mr. Chair, I'm going to encourage you to kind of summarize so we can have time for questions, because we want to make sure we get a chance to probe you thoroughly.
Yep. And I was just about to say, I think that's all I'm going to say, and welcome your questions.
Well, let me start off, if I may. This is all really interesting. What do we need to do to increase performance by another 10% in this sector?
Well, money really helps. Obviously, we have... our situation is scalable, so the more consultants we have, the more people we can put into place. Beyond that, however, I guess a sensitivity to the challenges that these companies face. As I said, manufacturing is hard. We recognize as a company that society at large is asking for companies to recognize the need for family wage jobs, improved environment, several issues that you folks cope with every second of the time that you're here in Salem. That always will have an effect. Representative Lively, you asked about the effect of regulation. That does eventually become a problem that needs to be solved by these companies, how to conform to, let's say, tighter environmental regulations or things like increased minimum wage. We're not an advocacy organization. We're a service organization. So we try to support those companies and help them cope with the factors that are in their environment. So if minimum wage goes up, we have to help them cope with that issue. I would say the request that I might have with respect to the effect on those companies is, on your part, is patience. So phase-in of regulations is always very helpful. Understanding that there's going to be frustration that comes at you from certain elements of the private sector when you're taking action in support of a societal demand. It's just all part of the world we live in. So Yeah, I don't have any specifics with respect to that, just sort of a general statement and admonition.
All right, very good. Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. You stated something to the effect that 7% of the manufacturing is done in rural Oregon, but that's where it needs to be the most of it. And the reason I say that, because that's the poorest communities. So how do we turn this around? Because, I mean, we have the workforce in eastern Oregon. We have we probably have as good of facilities as anything. Maybe it's the traffic, the out of traffic it or something. I'm not sure why we don't have a better emphasis on rural Oregon.
Well, as I stated, we, as an organization, we are committed to rural Oregon, and we utilize a significant part of the state funding in order to serve that area. But that being said, it's a big place. So finding our way to the companies that are located there is a challenge. The other side of it, of course, is an expensive place to do business. I mean, you've got transportation costs that are significant. There's population out there, but it may not necessarily possess the skill set necessary to do the work that's needed. So any company that is located in a difficult-to-reach spot has got specific and significant challenges in order to maintain itself. We've discovered over time that, I hate to use this cliche, what's become a cliche, but it does take kind of a village to be successful in rural communities. So in Medford, for example, we had closed our office for a while, and because of in response to an increase in state funding a couple of years ago, we were able to reopen it. And our attitude in reopening is we had to reopen it in partnership with Southern Oregon Economic Development, the Job Council, all the local folks, the Chambers of Commerce, all the local folks that are down there also in that same business support ecosystem, so that we could work more and more together. I think that's that general trend is catching. I get far more calls than I used to for coordination, including calls from Mark Gregory, the previous presenter, on a desire to work together. We all recognize that to the extent that we can take the redundancy out of our systems, that we can work together to help identify and fine-tune our services with respect to each and every company, the better off they're going to be. It's not a completely satisfying answer, but it's where we're at right now.
Representative Lively.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So I'm a little interested in the size of companies. So one of the things we know in many cases is companies get larger to be efficient, technology plays a bigger and bigger role. But what we also know in many cases is small businesses might have more opportunity to grow and create the jobs. So you had 579 projects. I guess I'm trying to understand the distribution of size of those companies, not so much income but employment.
Well, the companies we work with range from 4 employees to 1,000.
Okay.
The sweet spot, the vast majority of them are in the range of 20 to about 150. There aren't very many very large employers or manufacturers in Oregon. So we tend to follow the market with pretty heavy emphasis on those who are best able to react and utilize our services. And I say that's in that 20 to 150 range.
Thank you.
So we've talked a little bit about the geography here and the need for support in our rural communities. Now talk to me a little bit about the availability of qualified and available workforce.
Well, great question. 2 weeks from now, we're hosting a manufacturing summit just down the street here at the Salem Convention Center. We'll have probably about 150 manufacturers there. And the theme of the summit is creating great workplaces. I think everyone that's in this world now recognizes the quote-unquote shortage of skilled workers that face the manufacturing industry. What we find is people always think, okay, not enough welders, not enough machinists. Well, I can tell you there are never enough welders and machinists, and there haven't been since the 35 years that I've been in this world. What we find, if we can address the internal training needs of companies for workers at all level, 62% of the workers in manufacturers are not in skilled trades. They are supportive trades, or not even trades, supportive workers, sort of general assembly, cleanup, sort of lower skilled jobs. So the problem is as much attraction and retention and then training once you have them as it is educational level. I'm not going to say that there's sufficient skill built into our high school and college curriculums at this point relative to manufacturing, but I will say that a great deal of the problem can be addressed through better practices in attraction and retention. So we're benchmarking other sectors that have a solid record attracting millennials. What are they doing? How do they treat their workforce? How do they, what are they offering that makes them attractive besides wages and, I don't know, free lunch and passes to the health club? What are the workforce practices that make a difference? And so we're really focused, again, on the things that companies can do now themselves to make them kind of a go-to place for young people who are looking for careers.
Interesting. Other questions, colleagues?
Yes,
Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So earlier we were asking Mark about the ability to survey to help us gather data, to gather information. Does your organization have that ability to assist us?
Yes, we're not really... we usually find that out because we're not survey experts, and we just recently, actually, at this summit, we'll be presenting the results of a survey that we did recently.
About that survey.
Sure. Well, not too many surprises. There's always, in manufacturing, there's always a big emphasis on cost. So one of the challenges that was clearly identified by a high percentage of respondents was materials costs, you know, trying to anticipate, control, and cope with it, because it's very highly fluctuating. Labor cost was number two, and then availability of labor, number three. So
let me rephrase my question, Mr. Co-Chair. So if we worked with the SBDCs to try and put a survey together, and we had a finalized survey, could we send that to you to have you run that through your...
Oh, certainly. Yeah, sure. In fact, as you were saying that, I was hoping to get the opportunity to support it on both ends, help on the design end to the extent that we can.
That'd be all right.
I'm guessing Mark will let us help. So.
He's a good guy. Would that be all right, Mr. Co-Chair?
Absolutely.
I think the comments you've shared and you and everyone else has shared are important. That let's gather this data and ask them, what can we do to help, and then begin to craft our committees around what we're hearing from them. Thank you, Mr. President.
I agree with you, Representative Smith. We're in the early stages. Time's going to go very quickly, and we're going to need to find the means to synthesize that information and not just learn from it, but propose from it.
Do something.
We're going to keep saying do something. You're going to hear that a lot in this committee. Yes, Representative.
Well, I think we have to remember one thing about sales. It's hard to sell a secret. We need to get the word out.
I couldn't agree more. Manufacturing is... in this country has gotten pretty hammered by the media. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, most people do not know that the United States is still the number one manufacturer in the world. China, of course, is close behind and perhaps inching ahead, but we're still a very dominant force. And the tide is turning back in the direction of the U.S. So,
and we're going to break up in a couple of minutes, but you talked earlier about the fact that most of the manufacturing we're doing here is being done for other Oregon companies. How well are we accomplishing that goal? Are we leaving big gaps? Are we just scratching the surface? Or are we filling most of our needs?
All of the above, I would have to say. it's a sector thing. So, I mean, in food, we're pretty strong. I mean, we're food and beverage, we're pretty powerful. In the Portland region, the metals industry is pretty strong, very diverse. But you know, we've commissioned studies on this. It's sort of hard to get your finger on it, but we're looking for gaps. But you'll hear things of sort of hard to solve problems, right? There's not enough meat processing facilities in Oregon to support, you know, sort of, okay, what's the action I got to take there? You know, generally speaking, the economy itself does a pretty good job of covering up these gaps. I mean, if there's a need for a company, if there's a demand for a company will spring up to fill that need. So things don't, you know, I can't tell you now give you a specific enough answer to that would result in action. There's little tiny gaps.
And I agree with you. The market is a remarkable thing to watch. And if mm-hmm. there's a demand, then usually somebody's going to step forward and fill that demand and make money doing so. And my question would have been, if that's not the case, if there are gaps, then what's preventing the market from responding to that demand? And that's going to be a question that I hope you mull over and get back to us when you discover some gaps. Tell us what we can do to plug them.
I shall.
I'm going to thank you for spending some time with us today. Colleagues, on the 8th of March, which is next Tuesday, the governor's cabinet on small business is going to be meeting. Representative Smith and I are going to be attending that, I believe, from about 10 until noon. Mm-hmm. And we had given some initial thought to perhaps, since that's also filing day and some people may be coming to the building or not, that we might hold a meeting early in the afternoon. And again, we indicated that if you can't be here, that we can have people participate by telephone. If you have suggestions for topics, for nodules, for subject areas that we can focus on in the coming weeks, please share that with the co-chair and myself, and we'll endeavor to really zero in on some of these subject areas, because I don't believe there's big answers. I think there's lots and lots of small answers that are going to be industry specific.
Small pieces of the puzzle.
Small pieces of the puzzle, exactly. So we've kept you a couple of minutes longer than we promised. Is there anything else today for the good of the order?
Mr. Co-Chair, I do think we're going to be surprised on how many small manufacturers we have in the state. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, there is a lot of them that you wouldn't even dream. I ran into this with National Sportsman's Caucus. Because we have so many outdoor activity manufacturers in this state. It's amazing.
It's good stuff. And we'll look forward to learning more about it. And if there's nothing else, we are adjourned.